Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Joe Courtney, tell me about Russia and the Ukraine. You're sitting in the House. What's the mood?
The mood is that I sit on the House Armed Services Committee, where we have gotten a series of briefings in terms of, the behavior of Putin and the Ukraine, and frankly, in general, because I was actually with the first Sea Lord of the British Navy yesterday, who said that, for the last year or two, he's been warning people that a, as he calls it, resurgent Russia, is something that, Europe and the U.S. has got to really recognize is happening. I mean, this is a guy who, aside from the Ukraine, has been heavily recapitalizing his military, Navy included, I think his own sort of psyche is, centers around this idea of a resurgent Russia, as the first Sea Lord said. And the actions in Ukraine, I think, are really consistent with that. It does look like we've hit a tipping point in terms of, the outrageous events of the Malaysian airliner that really has now, I think, made Europe recognize that, this is not a problem that you can just sort of manage regionally, but that it really has, huge impact across that whole part of the world, and that they have finally now stepped up. I mean, the president, to his credit, had led the way in terms of boosting the sanctions, the economic sanctions, and it looks like Europe has matched and even raised the president's agenda, which the U.S. looks like we're all in marching together. So it's this is going to really start hurting. It's already hurt the ruble. It's already hurt their growth in terms of what's going on right now. And hopefully, the fact that Russia is not the Soviet Union, where it is absolute tight-fisted control, that there are other sectors and forces within Russia these days that he's going to have to start pulling back. But it's clearly a new era in terms of U.S.-Russian relations. I wouldn't call it the Cold War. I agree with the president. This is not the restart of the Cold War, but it's clearly a new era of confrontation. And the pivot to Asia, that we were talking about, frankly, I think Russia and its, clear aggressiveness is something that the country is going to have to recognize is real and is going to be with us at least in the short term.
But isn't it true that Putin is playing to this nationalistic pride, and therefore his numbers are huge in terms of approval? And he says it doesn't matter that these other things are happening. And we've come to think that maybe he controls, the oligarchs in his own system. And if he doesn't control them, he puts them in jail. So when you say there are other forces developing, I'm not so sure.
Well, I mean, that is the question of the day. What I would say is that, so far, I mean, let's face it, his actions in Ukraine have been pretty much class-free. And even the early sanctions that President Obama aimed at individuals, I mean, that really is pretty flyspeck in terms of really having any impact. Going after, the large energy companies, which basically is almost like going after the whole sectors of the Russian economy, I do think, is a new, it's going to look different and feel different for that country in terms of, what is also fueling the nationalistic push was that they were experiencing some prosperity. Obviously the mining and oil production was creating this sort of bubble, economic bubble in Russia. And to the extent that that bubble gets deflated because of these sanctions, I think it is going to start sinking in on people that there's costs to what he's doing over there.
Now, you're on the subcommittee on readiness of the Committee on Armed Services.
Yep.
Do we have to be ready with Putin?
Well, I think if you look at, what the president has done is that they have actually moved up some assets to our easternmost allies in NATO. There's more planes positioned in Poland, the Baltic countries. There have been, again, more exercises, and I wouldn't call it a troop movements in there, but there's clearly a lot more activity in terms of NATO forces that are closest to Russia. Within the Ukraine itself, at this point, I think it's been fairly limited in terms of the military assistance, equipment that they asked for, frankly, the sea rations, the MREs, the meals ready to eat, night vision goggles, bulletproof vests, equipment that they can easily use and don't require a lot of training. Some people ask, well, why don't you, bring in, heavy, firepower? But the fact is that, this is a military that is really not trained yet to deal with those kinds of weapons. And to their credit, I have to say that, particularly since the new president took over in Ukraine, the Ukrainian military is showing a lot of improvement from, back when this crisis first started. So, and some of that is because of training assistance that the U.S. and NATO allies are providing. So, I think the president is right to be very measured and careful about not trying to escalate the violence with more and more firepower. But having said that, NATO, which frankly, the discussion on the Armed Services Committee, the last couple of years has been closing facilities and installations in Europe, and now I think there's a recognition that that alliance is going to actually be active and a player in terms of trying to push back on Putin's aggression.
Do you see any way we could end up in a real war with them, with the Russians?
I find that hard to imagine that Putin, because I mean, at the end of the day, he's the player that has the most control over whether or not this thing escalates, and it just there's no analysis where I think it's in his best interest to really invite intervention from the outside. Which again, he's gotten closer to that tipping point with his outrageous actions in the last couple of months or so. But as I said, I think the European decision this week, coupled with the NATO boosting of resources along the border, I think is should be enough, hopefully, for them to recognize that they're headed down a path that's no win for whatever pretensions he has about being a world leader.
We've been talking about armed services. It's not much more than a hop and a skip to the disgraceful way in which many veterans were treated in the United States. Are you happy with the bill that has now emerged between the Senate and the House?
I think it is a good measure, and in some respects is a bit of a groundbreaking measure because it recognizes what I think exists out there in the real world, which is that there are a lot of veterans who live miles and miles away from, vet centers, health centers that the VA operates, that there are shortages of clinical staff in particularly key specialty areas. So to the extent that the bill sets up a funding mechanism to buy services for folks who are trapped in these long waits or live 40 miles outside a 40-mile radius of health centers, frankly, I think that's a good balancing act in terms of folks who, on the one hand, believe that the VA does provide quality care in many areas, and outside groups have actually verified that. But on the other hand, it's a system which is definitely experiencing, particularly in the Sun Belt area, high volume increases. Vietnam veterans, primarily because of their age, are in many respects the group that is, spiking up the demand, but Iraq and Afghan war veterans who definitely have much more serious and, complicated conditions are also part of that spike. The bill, I think, recognizes that, the system really had a capacity problem and that there's also a logistical problem for people who live far away from these centers. And it does, I think, make a good, strong down payment and a rebalance of the system to help with both of those issues.
Our guest has been Congressman Joe Courtney, always a favorite here, Democrat of Connecticut's 2nd District. Joe, thank you so much. And when we come back, I want to talk to you about skilled nursing coverage for Medicare seniors.
Sure.